Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome back to Comic Book Nation, the only show that does it all for geek culture and the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and joining me today, I have my regular co-hosts, Matthew Aguilar and Janelle Wheeler, and we are joined here at the top of the show by my buddy and part of our anime initiative segment of the show, Mr. Evan Valentine is here, and obviously, if you are seeing kind of our post for this, we had a plan for a show today. That kind of got upended last night by the world of entertainment, of fandom all across the world, kind of getting a major blow with the announcement that Dragon Ball creator Akira Toriyama has passed away at the age of 68. I believe it's 68. Mm-hmm. And obviously we had to stop everything and kind of just take a minute to remember Toriyama and his just massive contribution to the world of fandom and entertainment via Dragon Ball and so much more. But instead of me droning on about this, I can just quickly say, you know, this man touched my life. I was a kid in the 1990s who saw a random Dragon Ball movie one night on my local affiliate station, popped in a tape as quickly as I could, set the tape wrong, only recorded like 3/4 of the movie. It was Dragon Ball Curse of the Blood Rubies, one of the movies from the classic Dragon Ball series. And for many years, I was just mystified by this little piece of snapshot of Goku, you know, the flying Nimbus, Roshi, and just this whole lore that I only had a taste of. You know, cut to a couple of years later in the 90s, I had a friend whose dad did business overseas and brought him a gift one day of one of the Dragon Ball Z fighting games for Super Nintendo, complete import, total Japanese, took us a while to ever figure out how to play. But when we did, I recognized, I was like, I know that guy. That's that Goku guy. And he's fully grown up, a bunch of other people in it. Had no idea what was going on because it was all in Japanese, but loved every minute of it and wore that game out with me, my friends, my brothers. Cut forward a couple more years. I'm getting ready or just up on Sunday morning one day, just eating my Sunday morning cereal. And I turn on that same local affiliate station in Philadelphia, and they're debuting a whole new series, Dragon Ball Z. I was there for the premiere episode and never looked back. It took up half of my college life. We formed huge Dragon Ball Z parties, rush out of class, get up to a place, get settled, if you know what I mean, and then just take in the latest episode of the Frieza saga. And I never looked back, and it's all exploded since then. Come to be an adult, it's a worldwide phenomenon. And just as I tweeted, it's an example of somebody's imagination, one person's imagination, continuing to push until it literally affected the entire world. And this is a massive loss. And like so many of you out there, I'm feeling some kind of way about it. And I know Evan has a lot to say as, you know, one of the core people on our anime team. So I've said my piece. Rest in peace, Toriyama, and thank you for everything you gave to me and to everybody else.
Very, very well said, Kofi. As I said before the show started, I love being here with you guys, but I hate being here for this. Akira Toriyama's influence on the world of anime and the world of entertainment, like, cannot be overstated. Dragon Ball's influence alone has so much of an impact on so many lives, but Akira Toriyama was also responsible for helping to create some of the biggest anime properties, as well as some of the biggest video games. Aside from Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, and Dragon Ball Super, Toriyama also created the series known as Sandland, which is getting a new video game later this year, as well as a new anime series on Disney Plus. And Akira Toriyama's designs also helped to forge the video game franchises of Dragon Quest and Chrono Trigger. Chrono Trigger to this day is considered one of the greatest role-playing games of all time. And his design work has just been unmatched in that. When it comes to me personally, I remember waking up early Saturday mornings to catch Dragon Ball Z when it was playing on, like Kofi said, like on affiliate stations when they were going through the Frieza arc, when they were on Planet Namek and everything. I would take my dad to there was a video rental store that was about 40 miles from my house, and they would rent bootleg tapes of Dragon Ball Z for stuff that hadn't come out yet in North America. And I would beg my dad to take me back there again and again to get tapes of stuff that just hadn't hit. That would be years before they hit. I would watch horrible like videos on Real Player to see like the Majin Buu saga. Like it was just like, and there, when it comes to like Toriyama's influence and Dragon Ball's influence as a whole, when Dragon Ball Super ended, because I've spent the past 24 hours just looking over all this different Dragon Ball stuff. And honestly, I get misty when I see the fact that the Dragon Ball Super finale was selling out stadiums in Brazil,
yeah,
in South America, in Latin America. People were just all gathering together to watch Goku and Frieza fight Jiren. And if you can't, even if you don't like necessarily know what Dragon Ball is or you're not familiar, like seeing how it brought together this world of fandom, seeing how it influenced so many people in their lives, it influenced athletes, it influenced celebrities, it just influenced so many people. And we have lost such a legend in the anime field and the world of entertainment with Akira Toriyama. And I'm happy knowing that his legacy is going to continue, because everybody's going to love Dragon Ball for years to come. Dragon Ball will outlive us all. And that's thanks to Akira Toriyama's creativity. Yeah.
And it's like you said, the legacy is not done. Akira Toriyama has inspired so many, you know, students, successors, people who, you know, came up under his wing that are now famous, from Toyotaro to the various artists that, you know, that we label as different eras of Dragon Ball art, who have all kind of stood up, to the voice actors, both American and Japanese, like people. There are a lot of people who this man instilled so much into that are going to carry that legacy forward. But more importantly, I think for everybody who's kind of tuning in, and there's a lot of you today who clearly feel some kind of way about this, is to take the message on the example that even today, like where we don't, we're so obsessed with like watching other things and, you know, being outside of ourselves and just tuning into other things. Like, the power of your imagination cannot be understated. This is an example of what you can do by just being you and creating your own worlds and loving that art, that act of creation, and keeping up with it. Akira Toriyama was still creating, even to these days. Like, he's leaving unfinished projects on the table as he's gone. And that is just a testament to the man, even approaching 70, never stopping, never slowing down. This is something you can do for all of your life if you are creative, and never forget that. And just, if we lose one, at least have it inspire 20 more people to go out and shoot their shot, make your thing, live in your world, love it, make it realized, and make it fun for other people. Because that was, it wasn't just him in his own head. It was him wanting to share and have fun and see the world, you know, experience the joy of this, you know, for better lack of a word, this great soap opera for boys that he gave us. And you know, it was that kind of the purity of heart of that, that we should remember in the creative process. And, you know, work on your thing. If Dragon Ball inspired you, take the baton and move it forward and give the world something else great that's going to make us love it. So, you know, heavy, heavy loss. I'm trying not to get all emotional too, because until somebody like this is gone, and I think it's the shock, because out of all the people we thought we might lose, like, I didn't think everybody really thought Toriyama was going anytime soon. I thought he'd be still like an 80, 90-year-old man, still getting excited about Goku stuff. And, you know, that used to kind of warm my heart. So this is a kind of shock, you know, again, shocking moment for so many people. But, you know, out of this dark moment, let's remember to celebrate what this man was about, that will outlive him, a legacy that will, you know, you are immortal in a way when you do things like this. So let's always just remember to celebrate him, celebrate Dragon Ball, and celebrate just the power of imagination, because as you can see, it is so rooted in so many of our childhoods, so many of our fun experiences with like dear, close loved ones, parents, brothers, siblings, friends. And just like as Evan said, by the end of Dragon Ball Super, it was just phenomenal to see that this had become a global event, that people all over the world at the same time were just so hyped up about Ultra Instinct and Jiren and this fight and all of these things and the Dragon Ball social media and all that. For as crazy as it can get sometimes, it is still a place, if you're a fan, to be and be connected. So let's keep going that forward with that. And I've loved the timeline and seeing my social media just lit up with Dragon Ball tributes, Akira Toriyama tributes to all of his works, and just realizing how many people out here like were really affected. Like we said, athletes, celebrities, people you would never think were like into Dragon Ball, all of a sudden, you know, are sharing Dragon Ball posts. So RIP Akira Toriyama, mm-hmm. Long live Dragon Ball, long live anime, manga, and this wonderful art form that has inspired so many of us. And we hope you guys are doing okay out there. We know that some of you, this can be really, 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 really affected by this kind of stuff. And we want you guys to be okay and to be able to kind of move through this and move through it together. So on that note, we are going to do our job and get from this wonderful eulogy back into the geekiness of our world. We are Comic Book Nation, the only show that covers all things geek culture, and today is going to be no different. We have a lot to talk about, and I know, Evan, if you have any last thoughts, please to share before you get out of here and get back to the wonderful work of just helping the world celebrate Akira Toriyama today.
Yeah, for sure. And that was great, Kofi. Honestly, couldn't have said it better. I think that one thing that I know that Akira Toriyama probably would have wanted is for all of his fans to continue to celebrate his work. And I know that later this year, he does have Dragon Ball Daima is a series that he created that will be arriving this fall. And I know he would want folks to, you know, check that out and watch it and everything. Again, just, you know, kind of as Kofi mentioned, take this as an opportunity to work on your own creativity and kind of make your own worlds and everything, because, you know, if you're passionate about something and you put it on the table and you put in the work, you know, you can just move mountains. So honestly, like, that's the message to take away from what Toriyama was trying to teach with Dragon Ball in general. And I know myself, I'm gonna, you know, watch some Dragon Ball this weekend to kind of honor his memory and everything. So yeah,
it's time to push beyond all limits emotionally. Emotionally speaking. All right. Thank you, Evan Valentine, for coming on and helping us get through this hard moment.
Thanks.
We appreciate you. We appreciate everybody on the comic book anime team and everything they do. Check them out on our anime segment, Anime Initiative, every Tuesday live on this same channel, where I'm sure they're going to have even more words to say next week about Toriyama, Dragon Ball, and everything surrounding that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Comic Book Nation, time to do our job. Let's get into the geekery and do something a little bit lighter and a little bit fun for everybody. We got a lot to talk about today. We are going to do some reviews. We are going to talk about the new horror film, Imaginary. We got to talk about some of the trailers that dropped for Inside Out 2 and that new Fallout TV show. Plus, I got to touch on some Dune cleanup. Dune is looking very strong going into its second week, but there's a lot of controversy about the ending and kind of all of that, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. I have seen Invincible Season 2 Part 2, and I have a quick early review for you guys about that. And Matt's got to talk about the new Netflix film, Damsel, starring Millie Bobby Brown, and we got to check in with Halo and some other stuff. So I hope everybody's still hanging out there. I see a lot of people jumped in to remember Toriyama with us, but hang out and let's do something fun and try to pull our spirits up. Unfortunately, Imaginary is not going to be the thing to do it. The new film Imaginary from director Jeff Wadlow and Blumhouse and Lionsgate. Not to be confused with John Krasinski's movie If, which is coming out in May, and they've had this little awkward kind of back and forth with people being like, wait, what's the family movie and what's the horror movie? And, you know, it's all about imaginary friends and people having trouble separating this and lots of mashups that are apparently pissing John Krasinski off. But so, yeah, those stories are hilarious. So Imaginary stars DeWanda Weiss, who we know from many things, but more recently, Jurassic World Dominion, where she had a breakout role in that film. And she stars as a woman named Jessica, who marries Tom Payne, as you know, from Prodigal Son and The Walking Dead. And they have a blended family. He has two daughters from a previous marriage, a teenage and a young daughter. And they move into Jessica's childhood home to deal with kind of the stresses of life that they're trying to get through. And there, the young girl, Alice, finds a bear in the creepy basement, who she says is named Chauncey Bear and is her imaginary friend. But of course, we begin to learn that this imaginary friend isn't so much imaginary and not so much a friend. So if you guys don't know, Jeff Wadlow is kind of a director who can, I mean, just to be fair, is kind of hit or miss. He did things like Cry Wolf, Kick-Ass 2, Never Back Down, the Liam Neeson movie Nonstop. He did some other horror films like Truth or Dare, Fantasy Island, and the Bloodshot movie with Vin Diesel. So kind of a B-movie track record to begin with. Very much into genre, very much into B-movie things. Imaginary is kind of compelling for the first opening two-thirds, I would say. There is, you know, DeWanda Weiss is a star. The camera loves her. Just getting to see her do stuff on screen is amazing. She's very beautiful. And she does a lot in this movie. She's got to have this very layered performance about a character coming back to childhood, who had some traumatic things, has to work through that, trying to build this family with these two, you know, little white girls. It's pretty crazy, but she handles it all well and is very entertaining on the whole. And I said that because it is part of the movie. Like, there are moments where she is the black stepmom, you know what I mean? And she doesn't deal with things the same way. And she and her and the teenage daughter go at it a lot in this movie. So it's she's a star, great to see, and carries a lot of this film. And Wadlow makes this very creepy for a lot of it. It's good kind of haunted house things. The shadowy figure who's in the background of so many shots, which is the demon attached to this bear, is it's just great. He's just in the background chilling in a lot of shots and doing that. There are some great kind of scary sequences in using a little child and a seemingly nice toy and the theory of a child's imagination to create horror is great. If you're a parent, every time your child now says some of that weird stuff you hear them saying, sometimes you're going to be like, oh my God, it's Chauncey. And so Blumhouse, once again, also creates another horror icon right up there with Megan. Doesn't matter if the whole movie's great. It does enough to make this Chauncey Bear something that is merchandisable. We will see again. Jason Blum's already teasing crossovers between him and Megan, which I would watch, like traditional toys versus electronic new age toy. I'd watch that. But by the third act, I'm sorry to say, this thing just completely falls apart. It is a mess in the third act, and it is laughably bad in the final third. Mostly because they overextend. It goes from a haunted house movie to trying to do this kind of, just like a Night Swim, which I reviewed earlier. I don't know what people's fascination with spending budget and story capital on taking us into otherworldly realms. Like, if you're not Insidious and smart and doing it on that indie budget kind of way, this stuff gets so out there in terms of production design, rules, what we should be scared of, what we shouldn't. And this movie tries to do that with, you know, taking us into the imaginary. And it's just, it's bad at the end. It's real bad. So like, performances are bad. Set pieces are bad. And it's just like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing here? So I think if they had just kept it simple and kept it to the house and didn't try to explain like what this entity is and all that, this would have been a far better movie for far cheaper. But I think that at the very least, we're going to see Chauncey Bear again, because the potential of the character in the mythos of the monster is enough. And they say, and by the end, they're already telling you that this isn't over. Anytime a child has an imaginary friend now, we should be suspicious. Sorry, John Krasinski. I gave it 2 out of 5 stars. You can read my full review on comicbook.com and go see it if you want. But in terms of horror, we are still thirsting for something quality. And Night Swim and Imaginary have not been it. And I'm sorry, Blumhouse, but you guys are kind of cranking out. You're in that MCU era. It's kind of cranking out.
Too much content.
I have a question. When does the scene we see at the end of this trailer, when does that happen? Which is the spinning light and the bear, the big bear in the room, and then the creepy girl.
The end. Most of the kind of scare sequences you see in this are from the end, where we go into the realm of the imaginary, where everything is kind of surreal, where like people are walking through the doors and suddenly they're separated in different places. And each scene is just kind of weirdly strung together. And that's one of the scenes that you could tell the filmmakers were like, oh, this is going to be great. But they figured out the sequence and then didn't have like,
yeah, because that worked. Yeah, people who watched me react to the live trailer, because I hadn't seen the trailer, right? So I lost my mind right at that moment and scared myself. And if you rewind the thing like 3 minutes back, you will see me freak out. That was live. So it's effective. It is effective. I'll say that. I'll give him credit.
Those sequences are, some of them are effective, but like, it's in the midst of a thing where you're like, wait, what is happening? And then like the main set piece, the decoration, the CGI to create the place and the monster is just, it falls apart in the end. I'll just be honest. Bummer. All right, but check out Imaginary if you want to, if horror movie fans. It is PG-13, so you teens can get out there and rock, have fun. And compared to Megan, I'd say Megan's a more solid film, because Megan just is a solid film for 3 acts. This one is pretty good for 2 and then kind of falls apart at the end. But that's the review of Imaginary. You can read my full one on comicbook.com. Horror. Matt, I know you're real excited about this next trailer. About Imaginary.
Pivoting to something completely different. Boy, our segues today are killing it. We're just like going from. Inside Out 2 is the much anticipated, we've talked about kind of the new Disney strategy, right? And they've talked about, hey, we're bringing back franchises you love and you care about, and that's what we're leaning into. And it feels like this role has kind of started with Inside Out 2. This trailer is, so Ember wasn't, you know, around when the first Inside Out came. So me and Anissa have this affinity for it. But for her, this is the first time she's ever seen these characters and things like that. So we watched the trailer together and like she was taken. So I think it's going to be her first movie in a theater. I think it's going to be her first one. And, you know, it's funny, though. It's very much a, you know, the daughter's entering the teens. And we're switching, we're adding all these new emotions to the mix, which, you know, like embarrassment's already adorable. Anxiety is in there. I think it's, is it envy? I think it's envy or empathy is the other one. And so it seems just like supremely fun, as bright as the original, but also, you know, with these emotions, the old emotions that you kind of already know and love getting closed off and having to kind of fight their way back. It feels like kind of that quintessential Pixar magic. I am curious, and number one, what did you guys think of the trailer? But two, you know, Pixar, like Elemental, I love, and was a hit, but it took a long path to kind of get there, and it ended up doing well at the box office, but over a long period of time, and still wasn't kind of to the heights of some of Pixar's, you know, high points. And before that, it had a bit of a rough stretch in the box office. Do you think this is kind of the one that really kind of opens the floodgates again and kind of brings us back to that kind of Pixar box office gold era? That's why I had the question in here.
I was gonna ask. Just like, I knew my next question was going to be like, is this the Pixar comeback film?
You're kind of the expert, Matt.
Yeah.
Who you ask? Well, so it's if you go back through, I think moving a lot of movies to streaming, you know, because of the pandemic and everything was the right move because you needed to do that. It was a health and safety thing. You needed to do that. But Pixar kind of ended up getting the, you know, lion's share of like all of their movies just being released that way. And because it happened kind of three in a row, it feels like that Pixar really suffered in that respect and kind of has this, you know, had to kind of fight back on this stigma of like, oh, we're streaming only projects. I think Elemental started to turn that around. And I think this is the one that because it's a built-in IP, because people, the first one is a classic. I feel like it's safe to say at this point. I think this one kind of breaks through and is that, hey, we're getting the amounts of people in the seats, people in the theaters that we would expect. I don't know if it'll hit the heights of like Toy Story, because that's, you know, that's just at this point, it's kind of almost unto itself. But I think it still does really well. So I think this one is the one that kind of breaks through and maybe dispels some of that stigma. And I hope so, because Pixar is just, you know, fantastic and a treasure. And I want to see them create more original IP. So for that to happen, that means these need to hit. If we want to get more Souls, if we want to get more Turning Reds, and they were excellent, then we need to make sure that the Toy Stories and the Inside Outs and the Cars, those all do well, so we can get those other things. And so it might be a minute until we get some of those original things. So I this one needs to hit for me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, you've been doing so many interviews lately. I love how you just queued yourself up for a question and then answered it. That was masterful.
This looks so cute, though. Yeah. Like, I love that anxiety is like having a moment, because I don't know when I started getting anxiety, but I experience it and I can relate. I'd love to see how that plays out.
Well, I think we all just, I don't think it's like we all like started getting it. I think we all just began to put names to things we were feeling where, right, or they were like, funny in the head, kid. You got a little shell shock. You're fine. You're right. Now we're like, okay, like, yeah, being shaking and feeling nervous and doing stuff is like a real thing. So
it's good. It's puberty. Like,
yeah.
I mean, she's going through puberty, and it's just like, as a woman, like, it's so funny because like every single time a new emotion popped up, I'm like, oh yeah. Yeah. She's probably 12. Like, It's just so cute. I can't wait to see this. I think this is going to be really lovely.
I think it's going to be great for who started out with kids seeing the first one and now are like, I'm in a whole new era. This old movie don't apply anymore. And it's like, okay, we got you. Our kids are still here. We got you. So, yeah. I mean,
also,
yeah.
A+ on the sarcasm.
Oh my gosh, that was great. The chasm of Sar.
It's really good. And I think anxiety is going to pull in a ton of people. We have people in the comments, like our fan, Chris Chipperson, watch our live show, who are going to be just a anxiety alone identifying with and coming in. So Matt's right. It may be the comeback Pixar film. We'll be keeping an eye on Inside Out 2. Let's turn to another big trailer that dropped this week. Janelle?
Oh my God. I am so excited about this. Dude, this is, I can't believe it, but this is, I think, my most anticipated project of the year. We just got a brand new Fallout full trailer. And if you don't know what Fallout is, it's based on a Bethesda video game about like kind of like the nuclear apocalypse. And I can't really tell by the actual trailer if they are like setting it in the 50s when they went underground. It's not like super clear, but either way, I mean, the technology kind of looks like that, like a little bit of retro pop vibe. But first of all, like the cast is just nailing it. And this is just really exciting for me. It's going to be on Amazon Prime. It's going to be a series. Not going to lie, when I watched it, I was like, this could easily be a huge film. I would go watch this in the theater if it was. But it looks so ballin'. The thing that I really love in this article that we have up on comicbook.com is they revealed that they're not retelling any specific game. So if you are a fan of any one game, it's not just like one, it's actually kind of its own thing, like Fallout 5 is kind of what they're saying. And I really respect that. I think that's good because it would be very, very hard to try to encompass, you know, a bunch of games into one. And it looks sarcastic and witty and fun and snappy, scary, violent. Like, oh, dude, I am so about this. Are you guys excited about this?
I never really got into the games. I played them, but I never really got too deep into them. I think that was like that PS3 era where I was over on Xbox and stuff like that. But what's the one with Gordon and also what's that one with I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I can't remember which one that is, but I know what you're talking about.
So, but Fallout became obviously its own kind of almost like punk-like, you know, counterculture vibe with like this unique universe in the combination of, like you said, the post-World War II America that developed and then stopped because of nuclear war and was preserved that way. And then, you know, centuries later, when people are coming out of these vaults, finding the apocalyptic version of what that time period would have looked like if it had stopped right there. It creates for the same kind of aesthetic that people love, like BioShock for, that kind of mix of dystopian, futuristic, and retro. And steampunk all together. And I think what this show has smartly done is, like you said, instead of being like, okay, we're just trying to adapt these games, it's just like, no, we're just telling a story in the universe of Fallout. And the key that we have to sell you on is, do we create that universe faithfully, but also fun and visually on TV? And so far, they are winning people over overwhelmingly by just nailing the details, the feel, the aesthetic, the music, the costuming, the set pieces, and just showing people like, okay, yeah. And just the tone of the show, like you said, Jonathan Nolan, who did Westworld, brother Chris Nolan, he obviously loves these games and gets them, gets like why playing them and the experience of them, the weird, the kitschiness is that made it hit. Because he definitely captures and conveys that in this show from what we've seen so far. And you just got like this cast with like Walton Goggins just single-handedly probably is going to be carrying this show and Invincible. Ella Purnell, like, and just Kyle MacLachlan. Like, there's just so many people in here that are going to make this show fun. And like we said, something different. Something genuinely different that will likely, like kind of like Halo, make us want to while it's its own thing, make us want to go back and experience those games. So I'm with you. I'm in. And Prime Video is just between like something like this and something like Reacher is just showing the range they can think of and to come up with good stuff. So
I'm more excited about this than The Last of Us, honestly. Like, this is so much more up my alley. And this actually is premiering on the 12th of April, just in case anybody was wondering. And there's eight episodes.
All episodes coming at once, which we've had a spirited debate about. Shout out to my buddy, Evan Jacobs, not in the comments, he hit me on my private line over here, but Half-Life was the other game we were talking about. Fallout.
Oh, Gordon from Half-Life.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, and just wanted to make sure to shout out, we do a full breakdown on this QuickSave from yesterday. And Ricky is like from the beginning, essentially, he's been playing these games. So if you want to kind of get a good balance, because I'm kind of like Kofi, I come to this franchise for the aesthetic and for all the elements in the world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've been kind of spotty on like game to game. Like sometimes I miss them and sometimes I play through them. So I'm kind of coming at this from a little bit of a broader view. And it's good to get some, you know, some insight too from, you know, someone who's played through all the hours and jumped in on that. So
it makes a difference. It really does. If you know what it's about, if you have like the backstory, I really think you're going to enjoy it more. So if you are interested and you want to like prep yourself, I highly recommend just going to YouTube and looking for like a walkthrough, like a playthrough of you know, a gamer, someone big that played it on Twitch or something. And they usually condense them down and they'll give like a good idea of what the story's like, at least in the beginning. And then that will like set you up to watch it. Cause this is so fun. Like, this is one I will watch an entire playthrough of someone for hours and hours and hours and hours on Twitch.
Yeah.
So yeah, check it out.
All right. And as Matt said, I forgot because we did the Toriyama eulogy at the beginning of this. We are Comic Book Nation. We have a whole nation of shows. Matt, as you said, did Quick Save, our gaming focused segment yesterday, where they talked about the Fallout trailer, the series, and how it's looking, compares to the game, as well as Matt's in-depth breakdown of WWE 2K4. Check that out. Matt also did the pull list this week, where we talked to the writer of Blue Beetle and talked about some big new comics that hit that we are also going to get to and talk with Janelle later on in the show. Stick around for that, because there were some interesting things that happened in the comics this week. We're also doing recaps of all the Halo episodes with the talent from the Halo series. And after episode 6 of season 2, Matt sat down with Kate Kennedy, Kai125 herself, for an interview. So be sure to check that all out. If you are a Marvel MCU head, head over to the other feed. Check out Phase Zero, the Marvel MCU focus podcast. And if you are sitting around still collecting Pokemon, check out A Wild Pokemon Has Appeared, our Pokemon podcast, on its feed. All right. Well, back to what we're doing here. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk about Dune Part 2, Invincible Season 2 Part 2, Damsel, Halo, and a bunch of other stuff. Be sure to stay tuned. Welcome back to Comic Book Nation, the only show that does it all for geek culture and the official podcast of comicbook.com. In our first half, we remembered the legend, the creator of Dragon Ball, Akira Toriyama. Plus, we did a review of the new horror film Imaginary and talked about the trailers for Inside Out 2 and the Fallout video game series adaptation coming to Amazon Prime next month. Now we're going to get into Dune. We got to talk a little bit about Dune. So I've been kind of really feeling like I've been kind of enjoying seeing the kind of Dune discourse. And I realize now that I wanted to kind of talk about it, but none of you guys have seen Dune 2 yet. You guys are far too busy out here. So what I will say is I talk a little bit more about it on Podcast X, if you guys want to hear that, with Screen Rant creators Ben Kendrick and Rob Keys, where I get into Dune ending, two's ending and its meaning. But it seems to be really upsetting people the way this movie ends and I thought that it was very interesting. There's a lot of kind of discourse about this as a, you know, white savior archetype movie. Is Paul Atreides a hero by the end of this? All of these debates that I think are making me like Dune even more. I went and saw it a second time in this week. And I feel like this movie is really kind of doing it for bringing back thought-provoking cinema. And so I will just kind of, I'll cut it short. I would say go listen to my uncensored thoughts on Podcast X, read what we're writing on comicbook.com. But I don't want to spoil it for everybody who's still waiting to get out to the theaters to see this. But the Dune 2 controversy and where it may or may not kind of lead into Dune 3 has been really kind of interesting and compelling. And one of these days soon, we might need to do a bonus episode, because I think this Chris Nolan versus Denis Villeneuve debate is something we really got to get into. But I don't know. Can we do that? I mean, have you guys seen enough of these guys' films all around? I forget. I don't know.
I have not. No.
I've seen a lot of Nolan's. I have not. I would need to bone up on the other side. I would need to do that to make that work. But I've seen a lot of Nolan's. I'd be interested to actually see how it shakes out, because I'm actually really split on Nolan stuff. So.
Oh yeah, no. I was gonna do it by eras. I was gonna do it by like their indie breakout era, which would be like Nolan Memento and Villeneuve with Prisoners. Then kind of get into their like big. Oh man, these guys are like next level movies, which was like, you know, for Nolan it was around like Inception, for Villeneuve it was like Arrival, then get into like their bigger franchise.
Yeah.
Then their bigger franchise eras, when like Villeneuve's doing things like Blade Runner and you know, Nolan's doing things like the Batman stuff. And then I think we'd leave Batman out of it actually. But we're doing Villeneuve doesn't have a comic book franchise or like a mainstream franchise. The most mainstream thing he's done is Blade Runner and Dune. So like
is Dune. I would say Dune's his mainstream now, right?
Okay, well so now you guys are suddenly in this debate.
I'm proud of this. This is awesome. Like when you're going through all these, it's so funny because like I am super fan, right? I'm just a fan. And I love that I represent kind of the casual fan on the pod. But like sitting here listening to you rattle off all of these movies, I'm like, wait, oh yeah, I've seen that like four times. Oh wait, Inception's one of my favorite movies. Like it's crazy because you don't realize how connected you are and how much you actually do know as like a casual fan. And maybe we should do this.
No, I mean, we need to do this. We need to do like a kind of director versus director battle. These would be fun.
Yeah.
Comment, shout out if you guys would like to see this. We'll put it together for you and get
director
on it.
Versus. Yeah, director
yes. Versus.
We'll separate it by era. Everybody drops a pick of who they think, like, and we'll kind of sparse out the films into like different eras or categories, and we'll each pick what we think was the best and why. Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Sounds good.
And then we'll get DJs for each side, and then some of them can dance and like
B-boy battle
and all kinds of stuff. Right? Right?
Yeah.
Like Omarion tried to do.
Stop it! Before we get too much. All right, let's move on. Read up on the Dune stuff we are writing, because there's a lot to talk about with this movie going into week two. And like I said, if you want to hear my unfiltered thoughts and really get into this, to the socio-political implications of Dune 2, you can listen to What Is Podcast X. We are going to move on and talk about Invincible Season 2, Part 2. Okay, wow. That was a lot to keep straight. So I am in the midst of my review right now, but it's been kind of a scramble. We didn't know we had access to these episodes, but then we found out we did when people started dropping their reactions online. But Invincible Season 2 Part 2 is coming up really fast. I think it's next week. And I've seen the episodes, and I can tell you, yeah, this back half of the season is intense. It's pretty intense. And if you have not read the Invincible comics, like I have not, there are a lot of twists in a lot of ways that this thing goes that you did not see coming, and a lot of interesting character turns that you probably won't see coming. And by the end of the season, it's really interesting where they leave things and kind of what it sets up as the arc for season 3. But I can tell you, I feel like the arc of season 2 is very complete and kind of really focused in its character exploration of Mark and Mark's trauma from and Debbie and their trauma from what happened with Nolan in season 1, and them trying to define themselves after Nolan's gone and who they are or are not as people. And I feel like this season does a good job within all the density and the comic bookishness that comes with Invincible of keeping that being the theme of the season and bringing that to a place of, if not permanent conclusion, because the story's not over, of seasonal conclusion and putting some new, closing out some things, but putting some new thoughts on the table that are really important. So that's as vague as I can be without spoiling things or giving you guys too much of the picture. There are four more episodes coming our way, and I can tell you the middle two are very much kind of development episodes, but have their own measure of surprises in action. But the first episode returning will be kind of up there with some of the big shocking things we saw in season one, and the finale episode is pretty nuts and intense. So can't wait for us to get back into this. Of course, we will be hopping on to do bonus episode recaps of each episode of season two, part two, just like we did for part one. So if you're not in the boat yet, go back to our Comic Book Nation YouTube page, read our recaps of season two, part one, after you watch each of those four episodes, and be ready to go next week because, season two, part two is going to be coming at us fast and furious, baby. And I couldn't be more excited. All right. That's my spiel for Invincible Season 2, Part 2. Check out my review this weekend on comicbook.com. Matt, you had a movie you were very excited to see, and I didn't really know about until I watched the trailer when you put it in here.
I didn't know either.
And I was like, oh, I'm on board for this. So yeah. You've already said the ins now, so why don't you tell the people?
Yeah. So Millie Bobby Brown, this was part of number one. The movie is called Damsel, of course. And it was actually in one, like some of the earliest Netflix, like their Tudum kind of compilations. But we hadn't seen a ton of it until like kind of later last year. And then they started to really roll out stuff. Essentially, Millie Bobby Brown is someone, and this is all from the trailers. I won't go into like super spoilers here because it just came out this morning. So no worries there. But she plays someone that, you know, is kind of she's a princess and she ends up marrying a prince of this kind of lavish kingdom. And you start to realize that not everything is as it seems. And this scene right here, like, oh my God. So this scene actually, like, it takes a minute to get to that scene. And so they do all this kind of, you're slowly rolling back the facade, right, of what this family is. And there's this really ancient creature at the thick of it and, you know, perhaps deals that were made. And so she finds out where she fits in all of this as being kind of the sacrifice. And what's great about it is it's a little bit of a slow burn at the beginning, but I think it works because by the time it really starts to hit like this part that you're seeing in the trailers, it's like it's going. At that point, you're invested. You want to see her kind of move forward here, figure out everything, and really confront this just overwhelming force. But what's really interesting, and they don't really touch on it in the trailers much, is that the creature is like, you know, and it's, you know, it's been purported to be a dragon, right? So I'm just trying not to like go super spoiler territory. But they don't really, so they show you like the force and the fire and everything in the trailers, but they're actually having conversations. Like the creature is taunting her throughout their kind of conflict. And so like, it's, you know, it's constantly saying like, oh, you're providing a challenge, and like, oh, you're smart. And it's planting all these things and constantly taunting as it tries to like, you know, kill her. And so you're seeing that kind of develop. And also they do a good job of like having her figure out there's something that happens kind of about like probably about 40 minutes in that kind of changes how she looks at things. And she's really good at like picking up on clues that, you know, were perhaps left behind by other people in the same situation, right? Because this is a ancient tradition. She's not the first. And so they play with that throughout. I thought they just, I really enjoyed this. I will say sometimes my only kind of real nitpick is that I think they do a really good job of doing the Cloverfield thing, which is like hiding and masking, you know, the monster in shadows, and you get like, you know, glimpses of them. And that's really effective throughout. But then you have like random things like where there that one spot, it's in the trailer and they're looking out at this like supposed vista, but it just feels like straight up green screen. Like it doesn't feel real. Like that place, I'm like, then there's a couple like that that I'm just like, that doesn't feel real. I really feel like you're standing in front of a sheet. So, but other than that, like, I really enjoyed this. I was invested. I rooted for her. I thought Millie Bobby Brown did a great job and just getting me hooked into this story. I mean, it's a story. It's like a type of story we've seen, you know, plenty of times, but I think they have fun with it and they do some interesting things. So it was, I really enjoyed it. I would heartily recommend. It's up on streaming now on Netflix. I'm curious to see what you guys think.
How's Robin Wright doing a twisted version of her Princess Bride?
Yeah. Oh my God. Angela Bassett and Robin Wright are both in this. And I forgot coming into this. And so like, I was like, oh my God, there's one scene where they're like opposite each other. And I went, oh, I didn't expect this dramatic powerhouse right here.
Just to bring it all around to last week's episode of the live show, this was directed by Juan Carlos Freycinado, one of the many directors who was once attached to direct The Crow remake.
Oh, what a plug. What a reference. That's great.
Well, if you want to hear me, Janelle, and Matt melt down on each other in its cultural significance, go back and listen to last week's
episode. We should have clipped that.
And Shogun. We got a good clip. We went on a... Yo, last week's episode was super spicy.
There was a clip of me realizing he's wearing a mullet. It,
like, half the episode is just grumble, grumble, grumble because we're like literally yelling over each other half the time. But yeah, no, it got real spicy when we got to The Crow. People have some real strong feelings about The Crow. So go back and watch that episode.
It's our
2 and Shogun review episode and the first look at Superman. So we got real spicy in that one, but it was a good time. It was a real good time. All right, let's do, before we finish out the show, let's do a quick check-in. Me and Matt, as we said, as part of our quick save gaming segment, do weekly Halo Season 2 recaps and talk with the talent. And we did it the same for Episode 6, Onyx, which, again, we're coming down to the back half of this season. Things are really kind of moving ahead, and we're getting towards... You know, the end goal is in sight, and I'm proud to report this episode makes it seem clear that the end goal will probably be the Halo rings in this. So all of you who are hating on that, you can relax now. We're probably getting the Halo rings real soon. But again, I think this season has done the job of making us care so much about this world, the characters, the different factions, and making those things feel connected as opposed to season one, that an episode like this can really utilize that, because this episode either does one of three things. It either kicks ass, pays off seasonal story arcs, or sets up exciting new things. And all of those things are done very well in this episode. So we're going to let Janelle cook more on what she thought, but I think me and Matt went into it pretty deep on our recap episode, from the brutality of a certain...
Did you?
Fight of learning why Spartan armor is very important, to just some of the drama we got. Fantastic episode. What did you think, Janelle?
I'm loving like the progression. I think it's great that we're moving the story along and we're actually like getting towards like why we care about the Halo and where the Halo is and why it's even called Halo and all of that good stuff. You know, I actually never really, okay, this is embarrassing. I never really realized why we call the game Halo. I never even realized it was like the anyways.
Yeah, you're okay. Nobody did.
You just go in and you shoot things. Like, I never played the actual game through. I would just go in, you know, multiplayer online and get a sword and just like slice people. Speaking of, the swords are so fun. I just love them. I feel like they've done such a good job with that. I'm interested in to see, like, I've never really been compelled by our villain, the Covenant. Like, they don't even feel villainous to me. So I'm kind of confused. Like, who do you want me to dislike? That's been a problem I've had since season one. Who is the actual villain? Like, who should I be cheering for and who should I not? It's not like super clear to me. And that's where I'm kind of, it feels a little hazy, but it doesn't matter to me because the action is so fun and it is like, shoot 'em up, bang 'em up, fighting, just violent space exploration. And I don't care. Like, I don't care that I don't really understand the storyline. I'm just kind of like loving going along with everything. But whenever there's like quiet dialogue, I'm not, okay, so comparatively, I'm loving Shogun, right? And I am reading every single subtitle. I'm trying to pick up on all of these like relationships. And like Halo is, you just turn it on, you have some fun, you watch some action, and it's cool. And that's great. Like, I love it for that. So, yeah.
Ooh, all right. Well, that, well, we didn't put it on the rundown, but yeah, Shogun, this is a good time to plug it.
Yeah. 3 episodes in.
Yo, this show is it is ruling TV. You guys,
I'm so glad you made us watch this.
Yeah, episode 3 would have been like the ultimate episode of a Game of Thrones season. Like,
yes,
it's nuts. It's just, episode 3 is just an escape, a mass escape and a chase across land and sea with swords and arrows. And it is a big in scope, just wonderfully realized kind of just battle episode. And man, this show is, some people are saying in the comments, and I'm getting texts about, like, yeah, this is my show for 2024. I'm sure I'm going to see other things. Like, I'm excited for Fallout. I'm excited for a bunch of things that are returning. But, like, in terms of when I look back, when this is all said and done, as, like, one of the best singular pieces of content of TV, like, this is going to be one of the best of the year and one of the best of many years that I point to. And I say, yo, you want to get into something like, you know, you like samurais, you like swords, you like all that, go check this out. It is a must-see. I cannot scream this loud enough. Go watch Shogun. Like,
do it.
For an hour, or if you're just catching up on all three, you can do a movie-length one. But, like, for the time you're watching this, your world's going to be okay. Like, you're going to be settled, entertained, compelled, on the edge of your seat, and yeah. And just the cast of this, like, Hiroyuki Sanada is already an international star. But, like, man, Lord Tanaga is just, it's Toranaga. Jesus, I'm crazy. My mouth is tongue tied. It's getting to the end of the show. But yeah, it's just establishing new characters that are just fascinating. And a show, like Janelle says, like, you know, about Halo, where everybody is gray. Nobody is inherently just good and, you know, pure. Everybody has an agenda. Everybody has some kind of dirt on their shoulder of some kind. And it's interesting to see where loyalties lie and how things shift. And this episode is made very clear how quickly things can shift. And so, yeah, I cannot say enough about this show and how good it is. But I've been saying that. Matt, what do you think?
Oh, it's excellent. I agree with Janelle. I am very glad you made us watch this. Because I was going to watch it, but I probably would have just, like, gotten around to it. It wasn't at the top of my, like, I must watch until you were like, oh my God, you got to watch this. Okay. And then I have not regretted it. One moment, and episode 3 ruled. So I have no notes. No notes at all.
Our only note is watch Shogun. Okay, so moving right along, Matt, take us out. We got a couple things to talk about for your agenda and some comic stuff we want to highlight before getting out of here.
Yeah, so we mentioned before, and Kofi did a great job before mentioning that the WWE 2K24 review is on Quick Save. The full written review will actually be live later today. So you can also peep my full long, I apologize now, very long thoughts on the game if you want to read it there. But wanted to touch on a couple weeks ago, I got to attend an event and we talked a bit about my impressions on Star Wars Unlimited at the time. Well, the game is out today. So now's the big day. You can actually go get the game. It's hitting stores, up for pre-order, all that stuff. Now you'll be, you know, your stuff hopefully will be shipping soon or is already at your door. So now's the big day. And I've had more time to, number one, I had some sort of self-restraint and held like 9 packs to unbox till I got here. And I finally did that. And despite my cat trying to walk over my cards, I still have awesome cards, and I've been playing with more of the different leaders and the aspects. And I gotta say, I talked a lot about how approachable it is last time and how you can really teach this game super quickly. We have an interview with the design team behind it and talking about how that was really a priority. You know, this is a big game for Fantasy Flight Games, and they're treating it as such, and they have big plans moving forward. And I just, like, the approachability is great, but then you've got to have something there to hook people for long term, right? Because people got to keep coming back. And the more I played with the different aspects, so like there's six aspects in the game, and they are vigilance, command, aggression, heroism, villainy, and cunning. And leaders of our different aspects, you know. And so you're trying to create a deck with up to two aspects, and it's all about mixing and matching. And that is so satisfying in this game. You're trying out a new leader. If you want to try, I got to show off this baby here that I finally, I got a hyperspace variant of my leader. You guys will appreciate Thrawn. It's very, very looking very nice there. And I'm very excited because I'm trying to find a spot without glare. But essentially the hyperspace variants are ones with like no border. So you really like the art just pops. But like seeing the different combinations of characters is really satisfying and aspects. And then now there's a new multiplayer mode that they've, you know, recently introduced where you can actually have two different leaders. So you really are mixing and matching in that point, and being able to balance other abilities. It's just, the more I get into it and start building decks, I've had the most fun building different decks in this game than I have with the game in a long time. You know, like Lorcana, I really enjoy, but like I built my deck and I tweak it. And then, like, I really like the deck I've built. I don't necessarily play with a bunch of different ones. With Unlimited, I'm discovering that, like, because I want to play with different leaders and that really changes my play style, I have, like, three or four decks that I'm constantly kind of shifting between and messing with and, oh, let me try this. It's just rewarding experimentation. And because you can use any card in your deck, you might have to pay a price for that, but you can use anything. So it just kind of rewards experimentation and freedom. And it's really awesome. Plus, I dig the art. So definitely recommend checking it out. You can actually get it now. So, and if anyone wants to, if number one, if anyone's local to Indiana wants to throw down, I'm game. Let me know. But you can check out more of our impressions. You can check out, we're going to have a everything you need to know to get you started. We've got a design team interview already on the site. So make sure to check comicbook.com for that. All right. So let's move into comics to close things out. We touched on some really great books and we had a great interview with the Blue Beetle writer Josh Trujillo on the pull list. But there were two books that, due to technical issues on my end, the conversation was, let's say, stilted. Let's say delayed. So we wanted to give them their fair due.
Tell the people the real. It wasn't technical issues. Your cat got up in it. Your cat came and did the thing everybody has nightmares of, where your cat just
My cat came and went under my desk and was messing around and pulled a cord, the all-important cord from my laptop that powers powers my camera, my mic, all that stuff. So like everything went dark. And I went, is the power out? And I was like, no, the lights are still on. So then I'm like scrambling and the interview is still happening as we're closing out, right? So then I get back in, but then I can't hear them and I can't see them, even though I'm in the session. So then I had to go to YouTube, watch live there to hear what Kofi is saying, and
which
then
is delayed.
React to that. But it was delayed. So yeah. We're having this whole, it was hilarious. not at the moment. I was really annoyed at the moment, but it's fine now. But we're going to give these two books. Yeah, we're going to give these two books their due. So Ultimate X-Men number one came out, and I was actually surprised because, It is not at all what I expected. I guess maybe I should have going into it. I mean, it, you know, this was always going to be kind of a different take on the X-Men, but like it really leans to it. I know you didn't love it, Kofi, if I remember from our conversation delayed correctly.
Well, I was trying to do many things at once. I was trying to hold together and talk about this in a compelling way. Because I always rely on you to introduce comics and break down everything. So I was trying to do right by the comic fans. And I've been too scared to listen back to see how I did. So let's just talk about now. It was, like you said, it wasn't what I expected it to be. And that's okay. This is the Ultimate line. But I expected some element of X-Men in it or just some kind of feeling of X-Men in it. And I didn't really get that. And that might be bad or good. And I'm kind of really interested in bringing this up because Janelle's here now. And Janelle has been infamously like sometimes. She's hit or miss with the X-Men books. Like, so much lore in those books and so much just comic craziness that it she's just looked at us sometimes and been like, what are you making me do here? get that. And Toa era and timelines and all this other stuff. Like, so I'm kind of curious to know how you felt coming to an X-Men book that is very much just disconnected from anything else and is just a completely new vision of X-Men.
I mean, is this X-Men?
There you go. It is.
Like what about this is X-Men? I don't know. Like, is there a mutant involved? I have no idea. Like, it just feels ghosty to me. It feels like ghosts. Yeah, but
question about that. Matt, was because we have a popular article on comicbook.com comics right now saying this is an X-Men villain getting a remake, and that villain is the Shadow King. And I was like, is it?
So I cannot answer conclusively, but what I will say is that I was going along the thinking of, oh, this is a take on Shadow King. I also thought, okay, well, this is also a take on Armor. Those are the kind of two mutants that I thought we were messing with and spinning. If I was wrong, then I'm super off base, and then that's okay. But by the end of the issue, that was the thinking I had. You know, they don't come out and clearly say anything. You know, I feel like that's part of the mystery. But yes, that is who I thought and assume we are kind of having fun with, because it does, that makes sense a bit if you're kind of looking at the way the villain operates. I got Shadow King vibes right from the beginning. So, but again, though, I don't think, have we ever read anything with Shadow King in it since we've been?
Well, that's why I was thrown, because yeah. Shadow King is back. Like, Amal Farouk is just back in another X-Men book. Which one was it? It was Resurrection of Magneto. Yeah, at the end of Resurrection of Magneto number 2, they find out that the entity that's kind of hunting them in this otherworldly place is Shadow King. So I was like, we're getting two Shadow King hasn't been around in a minute. We're getting two Shadow Kings at once, an ultimate version and a mainstream version. Like, this is wild. So that was the
He's back, baby.
I was like, are they really pulling Shadow King twice? But I got it. I feel like
he's getting two checks.
Peach's X-Men is very much kind of being tied, instead of the obvious racial, socio-political implications of the original series, this one is more tied to like teen angst. And like, being a mutant is more a metaphor for like a teen, and Shadow King is a metaphor for those kind of darker thoughts and impulses that come up, where we were talking about teenage with Inside Out 2, tying it all together. And so I got the metaphor, but I was just like, yeah, it's kind of weird to call this X-Men still for one, kind of a weird title to assign to this. And I hope and it didn't feel connected to like the rest of these ultimate line in a very weird way. Like, yes, we mentioned that the world's been cut up in a certain way and who's kind of ruling over Japan and all that, but that's about it. Then the rest of it just feels like it's just very much out on its own, and that this could be an indie comic of somebody's creation, rather than an X-Men comic. So I'm curious to see what the next issue brings and kind of how this unfolds, and if it kind of dips into deeper lore about the actual X-Men and X-related stuff. This was a weird one. And as I said on the pull list, I think it also had the unfortunate timing of going up against another launch that was, for me at least, way more impressive, which was
Janelle, do you have a chance to read that one? You might not have, and that's perfectly
fine. The Mermaid?
I just want to double check. Yes.
Well, I had a chance to look at it.
Okay.
Well, there wasn't like a lot of reading involved. Yeah. Yeah. But it's stunning. It's absolutely stunning. I'm curious. I have no idea what's happening in it, but it's beautiful.
And I didn't get to say this because of the delay, but Derek Kirk Kim is the writer and artist on the book. And my word, like, this book, and there's not much dialogue throughout the whole thing, but it's used so effectively, visually, they tell such a great story visually, like just from the different, you know, the meters there that's in the mech, and from the facial expressions between her and, is that like a, I guess, salamander? Is that like the little creature? I didn't know if that was based on anything.
I don't think it has to be a real creature, so I think you're okay.
No, well, yeah, I know, but it was like a little, it looked real.
I forget what they're called. Yeah, they're like actual little creatures. They're so stinking cute.
Yeah, it looked like the little, it also honestly really looked like the fire spirit from Frozen 2, but that's just because I just saw that.
Oh my gosh, I hate, it starts with an A, an axolotl?
Yes, okay. That thing.
Thank God. Okay. I was like, Jesus, so it's gonna drive me crazy.
But it's adorable, but like there's so much said. Thank you. Thank you in the comments. But what I love is like the facial expressions, but and the little exchanges between them. Like so much is done with so little like getting in the way of just the stunning artwork. I mean, this book just, man, makes such an impression, and I'm so invested. Like by the end, I went, no, it ends. Like when I got to the end, I was so pissed that there wasn't like two more pages.
Yeah,
I thought it made a hell of an impression. Kofi, I know, I feel like you did too.
Yeah, I did shout out the creator. I made sure to shout him out and like do that whole thing before we got out of that whole discussion. I don't know if you heard it, but yeah, no, I mean, I think this was kind of like anime manga influenced storytelling, like to see this up against Ultimate X-Men was such a kind of contrast, because I feel like, yeah, The Last Mermaid uses very little dialogue, just equally as beautiful art, which Ultimate X-Men Peach's art is obviously very beautiful and
right,
and gorgeous. But did more in that first issue to pull me in to care about every single character, their conflict. What is the world we are in? I already feel like I understand it enough and I'm in it enough, and to set up real stakes so that I was turning each page like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And there wasn't even like a delay, and like nothing was wasted. And like you said, by the end, I am like already waiting for the next issue to drop just to see like yeah, what happens next. Because, and that's, and I care about the mermaid. I care about the, Ambystoma mexicanum, which is the scientific name for the axolotl. So
thank you.
Yeah, said it right. Other characters are now dear to me already, and like I care about what happens to them. And the concept has enough just built in that first issue that I want to see more, like just the hints of what this mech suit can do, how it can transform, what powerful weapon, how she got there, you know, how long has she been surviving? Like all of these things are things I already want to know. And yeah, and I think it was just the comparison of that, just saying like, yeah, if you're going to introduce a world and take things in this very kind of separate standalone direction in some ways, like you really got to nail it in that first issue. And I feel like Last Mermaid did just a fantastic job nailing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, it's interesting. Did anyone read the kind of after the like not epilogue, but the creator goes into detail, kind of the back of the book about like the creation process and like how long this has been, like a 10-year journey.
Wow.
To get, and this all started from a character design that like an idea he had, and like it, you know, never got used, and it just kind of always stuck, like this one visual stuck around in his head for so long, and he was like, I finally have it, and he finally like put it into the, and now we have this. Like, it's insane that, you know, an idea can just like stick around and form for that long, and then finally we get something like this. It's awesome. So yeah, definitely recommend checking that out. There were a lot of great comics this week, but this one made a hell of an impression. So that's comics for me. Any last notes you guys want to add?
I want to say that what Matt said there is a perfect circle back for this whole episode, which the theme of which is the power of ideas and the staying power of ideas. So now we have The Last Mermaid, you know, coming from Derek Kirk Kim, who is obviously somebody who was influenced by anime, manga. And he's launching something that has already captured our imaginations, even as we lose Akira Toriyama, a man who first inspired us, many of us, to look beyond our own shores to the storytelling overseas, to something like Dragon Ball and the whole world he created through that simple idea of a little boy with a bow staff and a tail, you know? So the theme of this idea is kind of just, yeah, the cycle of life and creativity, guys. Get out there, be creative, invest in yourself and your ideas, develop them. Sometimes it can take many, many years. I got things I've been working on. I was just talking to somebody for like 20 years. I've been rewriting some of the same ideas that I can't get rid of. But now's the time to kind of move ahead and really push those ideas out and add something creative to the world. So we're not usually this serious on Comic Book Nation at the end, but today seemed like a little bit more of a serious day for reflection. So RIP Akira Toriyama. Thank you guys for tuning in. Everybody watching on Twitter, there's been a lot of you. We hope that we can provide you a little bit of levity and some fun fandom to kind of help you through this heavier time. And we want to see you guys again. So be sure to subscribe to Comic Book Nation on all our podcast platforms. We're everywhere. We're on Apple, Spotify, iHeartMedia, you know, Stitcher, everywhere you get your podcasts. And subscribe to the Comic Book Nation YouTube page where we drop loads of bonus content like our interviews, breakdowns, and videos for our various segments, which include Quick Save on gaming, Anime Initiative on anime, and Matt with the Pull List on comics. Thank you, Matt and Janelle, for once again holding it down. We want to send a shout out to our other co-host, Connor Casey, who is still on his Italian vacation getaway with his lovely lady. Buongiorno to you both, and hope to see him back next week, where we will be back doing our live show again, new movies, continued TV shows, and all the things that will be happening in fandom between then and now. We are Comic Book Nation, and if you want to follow us individually, you can follow me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
And you can find me at Janelle on Twitch and Janelle Wheeler everywhere else.
Just making sure you guys are still on your toes. I haven't done one of those in a while. Reaction time. But all right. Everybody have a good weekend. Do something fun. Watch something fun. Do something
creative. Eat a donut.
Comic Book Nation and
yes, eat donuts.
I'm going to go.
Matt and I, we're the best.
All right. We'll see you guys again soon. We are Comic Book Nation.
Bye, guys.